Hello, and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1980 Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the gods, monsters, heroes, and mythological beings that I find in it, and how to use them and religion and mythology more generally in your fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we are covering the last deity in the Cthulhu Mythos section, which was removed after the second printing of the Deities and Demigods book following a licensing dispute. Today's deity is Yog-Sothoth, the Key and the Gate, and there's a lot to talk about, so let's get started. Yog-Sothoth is one of the central deities of the Cthulhu mythos. Indeed, as I've said before, the term Cthulhu mythos was coined by August Derleth, and it isn't necessarily the case. Like, that's not an obvious name. Cthulhu doesn't play a particularly important role in the mythology, just has a notable story. Indeed, one of the alternative names that August Derleth considered was the Mythology of Hastur. But Lovecraft himself, when he chose to refer to the complex of mythological or pseudo-mythological references that he included in his work, often used the term Yog-Sothothery, which I think is pretty good. And in his specious genealogy, Yog-Sothoth is one of the most important beings in the pantheon. He's Cthulhu's grandfather, and Azathoth's grandson, or grandchild, anyway. But none of that is really important. What matters is how Yog-Sothoth appears in Lovecraft's fiction. Now, like a lot of the other deities of the Cthulhu mythos, he's frequently mentioned or appealed to in Cthulhu mythos fiction. But if we're talking about Yog-Sothoth, we're really talking about two main tales. The first of these is The Dunwich Horror, written in 1928, published in 1939. The Dunwich Horror is a story that's almost a more conventional monster story than a lot of other Cthulhu mythos fiction. I know that S.T. Joshi has had some trouble making it fit with his vision of the Cthulhu mythos, because in fact, it's about what it really resembles more than anything else is a Call of Cthulhu scenario. There's a series of strange events, a mysterious monster, and then a team of professors get together and they stop the monster. Well, indeed, there's two monsters, hybrids, that result from a mating between Yog-Sothoth and a mortal woman. One who's a little bit more human-looking, that is to say, he's kind of a freakish goat monster, and one that more resembles Yog-Sothoth, which is a big roiling mass of tentacles and whatnot. And it is that big roiling mass of tentacles that Errol Otis seems to have taken for his inspiration for the illustration of Yog-Sothoth in this section. And I think it's interesting that there is, in fact, a female character in that image. And I don't know, I thought she was wearing some kind of headdress, but now that I think about it, maybe she's just got horns. So here in The Dunwich Horror, we have Yog-Sothoth acting very much like a traditional devil, being summoned to Earth by a wizard, having a child with a mortal woman, and then the children having to be dealt with by a bunch of goodies armed with their knowledge of magic. The second major appearance of Yog-Sothoth is in the story Through the Gates of the Silver Key. Now, this is a story co-authored by Lovecraft and E. Hoffman Price. It was written between 1932 and 1933 and was published in 1934. And Through the Gates of the Silver Key is a much more kind of mystical, science fiction-y, or not science fiction-y, but kind of transcendent story. It has a lot of sort of psychedelic stuff in it. And it's a sequel to the previous, The Silver Key, which is in turn sort of a sequel to The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadath. A lot of the particular occult elements of this story are in fact the result of Price's contribution rather than Lovecraft's, even though most of the text, at least according to most sources, is by Lovecraft. Price was fascinated with Eastern mysticism and the esoteric and had read a lot about the theosophy and all that kind of thing. It was very much in the mainstream of occult and esoteric thought in the 1920s and 1930s. And in Through the Gates of the Silver Key, Yog-Sothoth appears in several guises. First, he appears as a robed being called Umr-At-Tawil, the prolongant of life, who acts as a guardian of the ultimate gate that will give Carter a chance to disappear into the cosmos. And Carter basically becomes a disembodied consciousness in a higher dimensional space, who winds up being trapped in an alien's body. Having passed through the ultimate gate, Carter once again encounters Yog-Sothoth, who explains something of a more detached cosmology of the Cthulhu mythos. And let me give you an example. Carter realizes that he is basically, his consciousness is one facet of a kind of higher dimensional consciousness, which is all Carter's of all places and all times. He says, "In the face of that awful wonder, the quasi-Carter forgot the horror of destroyed individuality. He was an all-in-one and one-in-all of limitless being and self, not merely a thing of one space-time continuum, but allied to the ultimate animating essence of existence's whole unbounded sweep, the last utter sweep, which has no confines and which outreaches fancy and mathematics alike. It was perhaps that which certain secret cults of Earth have whispered of as Yog-Sothoth, and which has been a deity under other names, that which the crustaceans of Yuggoth worship as the Beyond One, and which the vaporous brains of the spiral nebulae knew by an untranslatable sign. Yet in a flash the Carter facet realized how slight and fractional all these conceptions are. And now the being was addressing the Carter facet, in prodigious waves that smote and burnt and thundered, a concentration of energy that blasted its recipient with well-nigh unendurable violence, and that followed with certain definite variations the singular unearthly rhythm which had marked the chanting and swaying of the Ancient Ones, and the flickering of the monstrous lights in that baffling region beyond the first gate. Fright became pure awe, and what had seemed blasphemously abnormal seemed now only ineffably majestic. Randolph Carter, it seemed to say, my manifestations on your planet's extension, the Ancient Ones, have sent you as one who would lately have returned to small lands of dream which he had lost, yet who with greater freedom has risen to greater and nobler desires and curiosities. You wished to sail up golden Ukranos, to search out forgotten ivory cities in orchid-heavy Kled, and to reign on the opal throne of Elekvad, whose fabulous towers and numberless domes rise mighty toward a single red star in a firmament alien to your earth and to all matter. Now, with the passing of two gates, you wish loftier things. You would not flee like a child from a scene disliked to a dream beloved, but would plunge like a man into that last and innermost of secrets which lies behind all scenes and dreams. What do you wish? I have found good. And I am ready to grant that which I have granted 11 times only to beings of your planet, 5 times only to those you call men, or those resembling them. I am ready to show you the ultimate mystery, to look on which is to blast a feeble spirit. Yet before you gaze full at that last and first of secrets, you may still wield a free choice, and return, if you will, through the two gates, with the veil still unrent before your eyes." So here we have Yog-Sothoth as a purveyor of a sort of mystical enlightenment. It promises to show Randolph Carter the fundamental truth that underlies the universe, but it also tells him that he doesn't have to see it if he doesn't want to. It praises him for deciding to pass up the safety of returning to his own comforting dreams and memories and look upon secrets previously undreamt of, but it would also allow him to return to that safety if he actually wanted to, and of course he doesn't, and of course it doesn't go well for him. Or maybe it does, I don't know, it all depends on your perspective. But the point is that, unlike Nyarlathotep, who is basically tricking people into seeing things that they need to not see, and for that matter, kind of mocking them for being a bunch of rubes who decided to see this, Yog-Sothoth seems to be dealing pretty plainly. He's going to give you a revelation, and the cost of that revelation is the revelation itself. He's going to tell you something, and the price you pay for that secret is that afterward, you'll know the secret. Might be something you don't prefer to know, and if you don't, back to Earth you can go. It's for this reason, I think, that Yog-Sothoth is called the Key and the Gate and the Guardian of the Gate. And another description says, past, present, future, all are one in Yog-Sothoth. If you manage to ascend into this higher dimensional reality, then you would be able to see everything within our dimension, both in terms of space and time, simultaneously. Essentially, you would become all-knowing. And of course, in the world of the Cthulhu mythos, that's kind of a mixed blessing. Now, what's interesting is that, as we've seen, this is a big contrast between Through the Gates of the Silver Key, where Yog-Sothoth is kind of a god of mystical revelation, and the Dunwich Horror, in which Yog-Sothoth is the devil, more or less. And we've seen before that Lovecraft just never really cared about being that kind of consistent with these terms, you know. And for that matter, his conception of these things evolved. Even just 5 years later, he's taking a much more kind of science fictional, metaphysical, I don't know, approach to these texts. And of course, this one is also influenced by Price, whose bag that was. But the stories of the 30s do have a somewhat different character even than those of the quite late 20s. Lovecraft critics in the audience will be clenching their fists right now. That's an oversimplification. I mean, I'm not some kind of expert, but I know that that's an oversimplification. My point is just that we can, in fact, interpret these two versions of Yog-Sothoth as consistent with each other. And the key to that lies in what Yog-Sothoth says about the Ancient Ones being his emanations on Earth, right? Just like Carter realizes that he is made up of all the different Carters that ever exist or could have existed, future Carters and Carter as a child and whatever, so Yog-Sothoth is made up of all the different Yog-Sothoths that ever existed or could ever exist. And Yog-Sothoth, of course, is an infinitely stranger and more complex creature than good old Randolph Carter. And so its many emanations may be quite different from each other. And notice how the only real difference between this and Nyarlathotep in terms of having all these different forms is that Nyarlathoteps are explicitly presented as disguises, whereas we might say that Yog-Sothoth just has a bunch of different aspects and appears in them as the situation calls for. And you can interpret the events of the Dunwich Horror a little more consistently with time-shifting Yog-Sothoth. Right? That is to say, one of the weird things about Wilbur Whately is the way that he grows to adulthood super quickly. And this is reminiscent of the prodigious feats of youth exhibited by kind of fairy tale characters, or the protagonists of Icelandic sagas who often engage in their first kind of feats of strength when they're small children. But I like to think that it's because Yog-Sothoth just doesn't work on the same time scale as human beings. So Wilbur Whately is an adult well before his time because his time is now and all times are now in Yog-Sothoth. So let's say we're putting Yog-Sothoth into our D&D game. What does he look like? Again, I do not think that we can ascribe him the chaotic evil alignment that the Deities and Demigods book does. It seems really implausible. Yog-Sothoth seems pretty neutral and deals with Randolph Carter, at least, through clearly articulated rules. And that feels like the behavior of a neutral or even lawful being, right? Yog-Sothoth isn't chaotic. The universe is chaotic. Yog-Sothoth just tells it like it is. So while the priests of Nyarlathotep are, wizards, basically warlocks, purveyors of magic and magical knowledge, those of Shub-Niggurath are healers and fosterers of life, and those of Cthulhu are dangerous demagogues, we might say that the Church of Yog-Sothoth in your fantasy role-playing game is going to be full of seers and mystics. In fact, we might have kind of a reverse Shub-Niggurath or reverse Nyarlathotep situation, where if you're just joining the Church of Shub-Niggurath, you are probably just a healer or interested in, making crops grow or any of the other kind of healing and fertility aspects of the deity. And it's only when you get into the higher levels of initiation that, things get nasty. But I think that the cult of Yog-Sothoth are probably, at a local level, actually pretty grim. Wizard Whately from the Dunwich Horror would be an example of a local priest of Yog-Sothoth, whereas Umar At-Tawil, the prolongate of life, who is to some extent an aspect of Yog-Sothoth, is probably what the high priesthood of Yog-Sothoth are trying to get to. Because you're down at the lower level, and you haven't passed through the ultimate gate yet, then, like any other human, what you're trying to use your divine contact to do is, immanentize your God's will on Earth, and also smush everybody who was ever mean to you, and gain real ultimate power, or whatever. And you're gaining Yog-Sothoth's ability to see other times and places, to distinguish truth from falsehood, etc., etc., but at a lower level that's still filtered through your flawed human perceptions. This immense power is being granted to you, or at least some fraction of it, some tether to the limitless power that is Yog-Sothoth, and then you're just using it to basically be a jerk, which, again, is consistent with how humans behave sometimes when they get access to power. So your local cult of Yog-Sothoth could give people a bad name, everything from fanatics to just the deluded followers of a particular witch or mad visionary. By contrast, I feel like your higher-ranking priests of Yog-Sothoth are definitely some kind of, mountain-dwelling hermits who just kind of hang around contemplating the eternal verities. Once you've realized that you are really a hyper-dimensional solid where every facet is one of the infinite aspects of you, it's pretty hard to get too worked up about local politics. So I imagine that they're in some really difficult to get to place, and then, people come to them with questions and they answer with gnomic utterances. This kind of priest of Yog-Sothoth makes an excellent MacGuffin first off, you could have the player characters go to them and try to get some advice about whatever, you know, situation is occurring in your campaign, and they could, you know, respond cryptically in a way that sends the players off on a quest. I mean, that's the easiest way to do it. You could also have the kind of situation where, you know, here we have some incredibly wise and ancient priest of Yog-Sothoth that sits atop some cloud-shrouded mountain, and, you know, the lower slopes are ringed with all kinds of hideous monsters, or they're at the bottom of some dungeon that they went to go contemplate the ancient mysteries. But it's known that they always speak the truth, and that they speak the truth to anyone that comes to talk to them. So the baddies are, you know, they just have one burning question: where is the blue jewel? But you don't want them to get their hands on the blue jewel, so it's a race. The baddies and you both trying to get to the priest of Yog-Sothoth, and you trying to stop them from getting the information that they need, either by, you know, taking them out, or maybe if you're feeling a little mischievous, by taking out the priest. Although that seems like it might be a challenging proposition to go up against someone with real ultimate enlightenment power who can see all of time simultaneously. They probably know you're coming. And that also suggests the kind of magic that priests and clerics of Yog-Sothoth would be focused on. We got kind of divination and truth-telling and so on magic. You know, maybe you, as a lowly acolyte of this god, can't perceive all times and all things simultaneously, but you know that your god can, so you can use your clerical magic to get that kind of information. But they're not sages like, say, the worshippers of Nyarlathotep might be. You know, Nyarlathotep are courageous. You know, Nyarlathotep encourages his followers to go out and learn things because, ultimately, that'll lead to their destruction, and he thinks that that's hilarious. By contrast, the worshippers of Yog-Sothoth are just kind of channels for the universe, right? The reality is that the Blue Jewel is in such and such a place, and they're just stating the facts. A bunch of detached, ascetic monk types observing and existing within the universe but not judging or directing it, right? The kind of people whose motto would be, it is what it is. Now, those don't sound like very good player characters, it has to be said, but you could definitely see someone who had begun the path of initiation into the cult of Yog-Sothoth, but who had sort of failed to internalize their lessons of detachment, and so being able to see some shadowy fragment of all times and all places, decided that in fact they weren't going to just sit and detachedly observe all of the evil and injustice going on in the world, or all of the many wonderful opportunities for treasure, but that they were going to go out and do something about it themselves. Ultimately, that's pretty much the Doctor from Doctor Who, right? But you could be at a lower level than that. And the funny thing would be like, oh yeah, my clerical abilities of Yog-Sothoth still work, even though you'd think I'd be betraying my god's teachings. But of course, I am just a facet of all the other many me's that have served Yog-Sothoth, etc., etc. So Yog-Sothoth has its own reasons for continuing to grant you magic, which are, by definition, inscrutable. So we have a god of mystical enlightenment that occupies this rarefied higher dimensional space, sitting there looking at the intricate bauble that is the planar cosmology, but whose powers are being misused by either idealistic young hothead adventurers or hillbilly perverts. That feels like a pretty good god for a certain type of Dungeons & Dragons campaign. Yog-Sothoth is often represented as a mass of sort of glowing globes, all shifting and expanding. Lovecraft uses the word congeries, which is the kind of word that Lovecraft would use. There's a later August Derleth story in which the globes crack open, and inside Yog-Sothoth turns out to have been a slimy tentacle monster, which is just the kind of simultaneously obvious and yet also completely off-base interpretation that August Derleth specialized in. I feel like I bag on him a lot in this podcast, and there's some good foundation for it. It's important to remember his many contributions to American literature just in terms of preserving and publishing not only the work of Lovecraft but of other horror and weird fiction authors. So let me not denigrate his very real achievements, but on the other hand, sometimes he goes a little far. Anyway, my point is that a shifting, ever-changing mass of shapes is a good metaphor for that multifaceted existence that is Yog-Sothoth. Indeed, that is all of us. We are all, in a sense, Yog-Sothoth, since Yog-Sothoth is everything. But so, made up of countless tiny fragments and maybe all the different aspects that are present in your interaction with Yog-Sothoth are represented among these globes, and the different ones keep appearing and disappearing as its quantum consciousness reacts to whatever interaction it's having with you, should you be so unlucky as to have any interactions. Maybe, actually, that's why the son of Yog-Sothoth in the Dunwich Horror looks like a weird, hideous monster made up of all different parts, because basically Yogg-Sothoth's aspects aren't confinable like yours and mine are. It's not going to be bound by one species or one set of genetics. It's going to produce this bizarre hybrid that's made up of a little bit of everything, because of course Yogg-Sothoth is a little bit of everything. It's actually a lot of everything. It's all of everything. I had this idea, and I don't, you know, there are things about the Cthulhu mythos that I'm never quite sure about. I was talking to a friend, actually one of our listeners, the other day, and we were talking about the King in Yellow. And I said that there was this thing about Hastur and the mythology of Hastur that I'd always assumed was, if not in fiction by one of the writers associated with it, in a game book or something like that, but I can't actually remember where it was, and I sort of think it might actually have been a dream that I had, and that I then wrote about as part of a game of De Profundis I was playing. And sometimes I think that's true about Yogg-Sothoth as well. I had this notion, for some reason, that the globes thing is what higher dimensional tentacles look like intersecting with our space. I don't know why I think that, but just imagine, if you will, this may be a metaphor I took from a Rudy Rucker book, I'm really not sure, but imagine that you have a two-dimensional world. It's essentially is a plane, like the surface of a body of water, and you put your hand through that surface. What the creatures who inhabited that plane would be seeing would be five cross sections of your fingers, right? Five circles. Well, not circles, but you know what I mean. Five more or less circles. And as your fingers pass through the plane with their different shapes and widths and thicknesses and so on, so those circles would seem to change size and shape to the observers who were unable to see above or below their two-dimensional universe. Perhaps then the bizarre and ever-shifting shape of Yogg-Sothoth is what we get when some higher dimensional entity intersects with our three-dimensional universe in a way that we just don't have a way to visually process. You know, what we're seeing is something passing through our three-dimensional space in a higher dimension, and the reason why it always seems to be changing is because as it moves through that higher dimension, different parts of its ultra-dimensional body are intersecting with our three-dimensional reality. I don't know how that's useful in terms of putting Yogg-Sothoth into a game, other than that it's also a good reason for followers of Yogg-Sothoth to have kind of teleportation or dimensional-related powers. You can see them, you know, teleporting around and just being like, how are you getting from one place to another like this? Well, there's no really one place and another, right? All places are one in Yogg-Sothoth. Anyway, that's Yogg-Sothoth, and I think they actually can be quite a fun deity in a D&D game. Deities of the Cthulhu mythos are coming off actually pretty well, it feels to me, in these recent episodes, and that's largely because they're meant to exist as contrasts to a world in which there are no gods, a rational, scientific, whatever that means, cosmos. But when you put them into a deity-rich environment, the revelation that they exist is not as shocking. Anyway, our next episode will be our wrap-up episode for the Cthulhu Mythos chapter, and that means that I'm about to put up a poll, and that means that I'm about to put up a poll to let you, my patrons, decide what's going to be the next season of Patron Deities. Now, I am going to pick a hard one this time, because I feel like the Cthulhu Mythos one was a bit of a walk for me. I don't really have to do all that much research. It's a subject that I'm really pretty familiar with already, that I've spent a long time thinking about how you incorporate it into D&D and so on. So for next time, I'm going to put down some challenging ones, also because I'm about to finish up a big project that I think is going to leave me with a little bit more free time to research some of the topics for these episodes. This has been really handy to me because most of the time I can just sit down and record without really having to do a whole lot of prep. But if I'm about to get a little bit more free time, and of course as we move into summertime when I'm, you know, my teaching load is a lot less, I think that would be a good time to do one of the more challenging ones. Anyway, Cthulhu Mythos Wrap-Up will be next time on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.